Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and for 30 years, I have been both the CEO of Technology Partners and the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm grateful to have Horst Schulze on the show today. Horst is the co-founder and former president of the Ritz-Carlton Hotel Company. Well, welcome to the Something Extra podcast, Horst Schulze. I am so delighted to have you on the show today. Thank you for making the time.
Nice to be with you.
Good to be with you too. You are, not to embarrass you, but you are a living legend. You truly are a living legend in the hospitality and luxury hotel world. And I will tell you, your wife, Sherry, is a living legend too. And I know you know this.
She is truly a support system and a great partner, a great wife. She is my whole life, my business life, my personal life is an example how a great relationship can be of great value to your success and your fulfillment in life and so on. And marriage in itself, I see marriage the only God-ordained union there is, the most important union. And if we work on it, it can be sensational. And mine is.
Oh, that is amazing. Well, you told me you guys have been married for 47 years.
That's correct. And still in love. By the way, that is nothing but a decision, because after all, our destiny depends on the decisions that we make. Our outcomes depends on the decisions we make. I made a decision to be in love the rest of my life. Yes. Once you make that decision and you're committed to it, you find the answers on how to accomplish it.
Yes, I love that. It is a choice. It's a daily choice, isn't it, Horst?
It's a decision, of course. It's a choice. Everything is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to ask you about the secret sauce, and I think you just told me at least one part of that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the secret sauce, well, it is not only marriage. First of all, it starts at anything you do. It is what is your high intent in what you decide, what you're doing. And in fact, and I look at it as my philosophy. People, unfortunately, often all they do in life fulfill certain function. They go to work, they fulfill function, but they have no high intent for their function. You shouldn't, we are human beings. We should not fulfill functions without a higher intent. At the same time, as leaders, we should not hire people just to fulfill functions. We should invite them for a purpose, for a high intent. The chair in which we're sitting is fulfilling a function.
But yes.
We're human beings. We don't do things without a higher intent. If it is, if it's going to work, if it is, it is anything at all, or if it's going into a marriage, we shouldn't just get a marriage because that's what you do and it's fun and it's and no, there should be a true high intent. Is that marriage going to be in 50 years from now?
Mm-hmm.
Once I know that, once I establish that, I can and commit myself to it. I now have to initiate what actually gets me there. It's no different than a business. Like when I started Ritz-Carlton, my intent, mind you, there was no hotel. There was a hotel that was being built as a Holiday Inn. And I was joining that group. I was not an investor, with the intent of creating the finest hotel company in the world. Well, once that was a decision, I had to decide, what do I have to do in order to make it the finest hotel company in the world?
I love that. I love that, Horace. It reminds me that you kind of start with the end in mind.
Well, exactly.
Start with the end in mind and then work backwards from that. That's I love that.
Well, that is exactly it. And very definitely, and you see all around, people go to work. And I mean, I remember talking to a group of employees, in fact, trying to establish for that department a purpose. In fact, purpose. The Bible even said you will perish without purpose. But I would talk to those employees. There were about 30 in the room. And I said, what do you want to accomplish with your department? And somebody said, we want to be the best. So I said, does everybody agree? Yes. And so I turned around and wrote it on a flip chart. And somebody behind me said, and I said, when I wrote on the flip chart, the best, and said, that's a purpose. That should be the reason you come to work, to make this the best. And somebody behind me said, I come to work to make money.
Mm.
What a sad thing. And I turned around and said, who will make more money? The one that will be the best or the one that just works for money?
There you go.
You know, if you just work for money, it's no different than a wild animal that forages for food.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can have, they have the strength to live and have the strength to have young ones, the strength to build it then. That's what we are. We should have a higher intent in life.
Yes.
In all that we do.
I agree. Well, I want to talk all about the Ritz-Carlton. I want to talk about how you look at your employees as business partners. We're going to talk about all that, Horace, but I'd love for you to take me back to your childhood in Germany. And you know, what was it like for you? I want to read one thing and then you can comment on this. This is from your book.
Okay.
And this was a neighbor that had said something to your mom, said, do you know what your son said in school today? He said that when he grows up, he wants to work in a hotel. You said in your small German town, every self-respecting family wanted their sons to aspire to be one of two futures, a technical position, an engineer, architect in a big city, or else winemaking at home. And you said to talk about hotel work was like saying you wanted to be a street sweeper. Where had I, at age 11, gotten such a crazy idea? Our village did not even have a hotel or a proper restaurant, for that matter. To this day, I cannot remember the source of my notion. I must have read it in a book, but I would not be dissuaded. You were 11 years old, Horace. You didn't even have a hotel in your town.
That's right. I have never been in a hotel. As I say, my parents, my mother did not know why I came up with it. I don't know. We tried to figure out for years as long as she lived, but we don't know. But yeah, I must have read something. So I insisted on it. So my parents finally gave in, and because I was crying about and begging about it, and they found a job. They inquired and they were advised to find a job in the best hotel in the region. Unfortunately, that was about 100 miles away, but mm-hmm. they found a job there as a busboy, and my mother took me there, and I lived in a dorm room with other kids. It was my the first day going there kind of changed my life. My mother took me there, obviously.
Yes.
My father was working. And the first one I met was the general manager of the hotel. And he spent 5 minutes with us, welcome, and I made it very clear, you're here to learn, to become a servant to fine ladies and gentlemen. Our guests are fine ladies and gentlemen. And that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted. To work in a beautiful surrounding with fine people and so on. So the next person I meet is the maitre d' of the hotel, the head waiter of the hotel, whom I would work for, and an exceptional human being who changed my life. And of course, when you're 14, I worked with him when I was 14 till 17, very informed years where you formative years. But the first thing he said, two sentences, which, believe me, I didn't get it, went over my head. I was 14. My goodness.
Right.
He said, now, tomorrow come to work at 7 a.m. If I meant 1 minute after 7, I would tell you so. With other words, he made it very clear. We are precise here. When we say something, we mean it. We do things correctly, everything. That's what he meant, and I stood that after a while. I didn't get it there. And then he said, and don't come to work tomorrow. Come here to create excellence in what you're doing. Now, that really went over my head, because I had assumed tomorrow, the next first day of work, I would wash dishes, clean floors, and so on. That was kind of the assumption I had learned. But excellence, obviously, that didn't mean washing dishes. Well, I learned it meant washing
excellently. And doing them excellently, right?
Excellently. That's right. I'm here to create excellence. And in fact, working with that exceptional gentleman who also made it always clear, you are not a chair, you're a human being that fulfills functions for high purpose. And our high purpose here is not to serve food, not to serve beverage, but to instill well-being in people. When I left that 3.5 years later, he said, look me in the eyes, promise me never ever to go to work. Only God create excellence. And it was a very informative year and very important, and it impacted my life, because everything he did, truly, I couldn't accomplish that in my life. I do things without thinking. Often, he didn't do anything without a high intent. I literally mean it. I literally mean it. He was an exceptional gentleman, exceptional human being, of an elegance of times past. He spoke 6 languages perfect. He was what you would see maybe in a movie as an exceptional human being. And of course, he worked in tales and metabolism. I mean, perfect.
My goodness. What an amazing mentor.
Yeah.
He really did inform how you've gone forward, Horace, with this gold standard. I mean, the Ritz-Carlton is the gold standard. I think, before you founded the Ritz-Carlton, you founded the Ritz-Carlton in 1983, but you worked for both Hilton and Hyatt. I mean, you've spent 70 years, Horst, in the hospitality industry.
I mentioned that.
That's a long time. How do you, and you've already kind of told me, I was going to talk about like your upbringing, how did it shape your perspective on your work ethic in your service? But you've already told me about the excellence piece. What about the work ethic? Because I know you're known to be a very hard worker among many other wonderful qualities.
You know, the world has changed and that's good. But at the time, we worked 6-7 days a week. We started early in the morning to late in the night. We worked easy 12 hours a day. In between, I went to hotel school in between. It was a different world. Mm-hmm. And I'm I have no regrets for a single minute, but at the same time, it was wrong. There was no life other than at work, in particular as kids, and for the honor to learn the trade. There was no pay. There was a few dollars pocket money, something like $20 a month. Mm-hmm. And of course, you had room and food and
room and board.
Room and board. And everything was free, if you will. But it was an typical German upbringing. When you learn your trade, once a week we went to hotel school where you learned the trade in a technical way. And then you worked, went through the day, and the evening went back to work.
<You know? laughs> Right.
Once a week. And there I... And I tell that story also in the book, but that is kind of impacted my life in a way. One thing that happened there is that after 2 years, going to hotel school, the teacher asked, write an essay what you now think about your industry. Well, going back to work that night, I cleaned the table in the corner and I literally can see the table. And in that moment, the maitre d' entered the room. I'm not kidding. And you heard those things saying, I've never experienced it. I don't think it even exists, but it did exist. When he entered the room, you could feel it throughout the room. Mm. It's just an exceptional human being. And he approached the table. Now, remember that the general manager said, you're here to learn to serve, to be a servant, to find ladies and gentlemen. That, in fact, was the mantra of the hotel. We are servants to fine ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Now, and I saw the maitre d' approach a table that night, and I realized the guests at that table were proud that he came to them.
Yes.
I never realized that, but I realized that moment, yeah. Guests are proud when he comes to their table. When I contemplated that night my essay that I had to write, I want to write about that. And I realized in that evening, why were they proud? Because he had defined himself as an exceptional gentleman. He was known as such, as an exceptional human being. And I, for the first time, realized I can define myself too. Even if I was a dishwasher for the rest of my life, I still can define myself as a fine human being. And that realization and that thought then triggered my essay, and I named that essay that night, "We are ladies and gentlemen, we're not servants. We are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. And if that service is not good, then we sentence ourselves not to be ladies and gentlemen." So, and I named the essay, the headline, "We are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen." Now, I turned this in a week later. And a week later, going to school, there was a big fuss. The teacher read my essay to the class, and other teachers came in. I got an A, the only A I ever had before and after. So because of the big deal, I kept that SA.
Right.
Forever.
I mean, that's what you say, that you're famous.
Yeah. And then, of course, when I started Ritz-Carlton, I made that the motto of the company, and it's literally world famous. Everybody in the hotel industry, upper market, knows it.
Yes.
Yes. It comes from this SA, which I wrote when I was 16, and all triggered by the air, by the philosophy, by the input, by the air that the maitre d' created. Mm-hmm. One human being.
Yeah, and calling your employees fine ladies and gentlemen, sometimes we rise to what is expected of us, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and I made it very clear. We hire ladies and gentlemen, And by the way, we didn't hire them to work for us. We hired them to join us to make this the finest hotel company in the world.
Mm-hmm.
To become part of us. It's essential for leaders to invite people to join the leader. The leader is only a leader if the leader has a great vision. Otherwise, not a leader. Otherwise, he or she may be managers, but they're not leaders. Leading implies that you have a destination in mind. And frankly, sadly, and I've really studied that, very few top managers are actually leaders. They may be good managers, but they're not leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that over and over again. And in fact, I made one study of 65 general managers that kind of reported to me. And I came to the conclusion that when, and I was generous, there were five leaders, the rest were managers. They managed product, they managed people, but they did not invite people to join them in a journey toward a high intent.
A high intent.
My high intent. But of course, if you have a high intent as a leader, I only left, hired to join, to create this new, to start this new hotel company that didn't have any hotels and didn't have any name, which became Ritz-Carlton. I left for a dream to create the finest hotel company in the world. But I sat down with my first two colleagues that I hired and said, is that intent good for all concerned? If you lead your destination, your intent has to be good for everybody. In the case of work, it has to be good for the investors. Otherwise, you won't have a business.
Right.
It has to be good for the customer. It has to be good for the employee. It has to be good for society as a whole. And I sat down with them for a whole day. We agonized that. And frankly, and I'm not trying to sell anybody anything here, but that's who I am. I asked myself afterwards, would God approve? So once I establish it's good for all concerned, very definitely, unquestionably, in my opinion, God would approve. I, in fact, was painted in the corner. I could not compromise it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go after making the best in the world because I knew it was good for all concerned, and I couldn't compromise it for anybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm, that is beautiful. Horse, I love that. Yes. I mean, once you decided that, right, then this is the thing that I need to do, and I cannot compromise
for everybody. But because if I would have compromised, I would have gone against the investors, mm-hmm. against the employees,
yes.
against the customer. I couldn't do that anymore. It was very clear. And once that had been established, the next thing you have to do, truly commit yourself to it, and then initiate the things that get you there. You have to,
mm-hmm. you have to
identify the things that make you the best in the world and lead your company to do that.
Yeah. So that you set me up. That's my next question. Lead, you know, the things that are going to get you there, right? So excellence is one of those. But when you founded the Ritz-Carlton, what were those non-negotiables?
Well, excellence. Or, no, all non-negotiables have to be accomplished with excellence. Well, let me put it this way. A great company understands the expectation of their market relative to their product. See, it's not about me. It's about the market. So we had careful studies done by J.D. Power, in fact. What is the expectation in the high market segment for an excellent, for a luxury hotel? What is the expectation of experience? Then we determined those expectations. There was things that you can imagine. For example, exceptional cleanliness.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's exceptional cleanliness, I had to say, how do I make sure and what are the processes to assure that I have the cleanest rooms in the industry? If I want to be the best in the world, I have to have an expectation like that superior to my competition.
Yes.
So I actually created a team to say, how do we create a room that is actually cleaner than anybody else's room? And I knew my hotel's rooms were cleaner than anybody else's room. I knew mm-hmm. that based yes. on the process that we created. We knew that the customer, seemingly unimportant thing, like one of the negotiated number 16, I know the number still. Number 16 was, if a guest asks for direction, never point, take them there.
Take them there. Mm-hmm.
And so we developed 20 non-negotiables, or which were called gold standards or service principles, whatever. I call them non-negotiables. We made sure every employee understood them and that we kept them alive. We repeated them once a day. We discussed them. And or when I called non-negotiable, because I happened to call my early on at that time, my general manager in Shanghai, because something happened. And the general manager said, well, Horst, you don't understand Shanghai. Yeah. I said, and I want to. That's why I have you there. But those 20 points are non-negotiable,
mm-hmm.
no matter where yeah. you are, because that's what Ritz-Carlton is.
Mm.
So instead of gold standard, I call them non-negotiable.
Yes.
They cannot be negotiated.
Well, Horst, and I'm thinking to myself, it's the feeling that you're leaving with your guest. So I know that I read this somewhere. It may have been in your book or something else, but even when someone pulled up, you know, the people that were helping with the luggage would look at the luggage tag.
You read it in my book. Yes. You read it in my book.
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
the friendliness.
You know, what is the expectation of a customer? The customer wants to have good service. What is service? What is service? And you know, I consult with a lot of people now. I talk to a lot of people. And many companies I work with that are actually in the service industry, when you ask them to define service, they cannot. Service starts the instant you make contact. It doesn't matter if that is on the internet or in person. It doesn't matter. That instant when they contacted us in any form should be an exceptional moment.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So service starts with an exceptional greeting. Welcome. Not hi. If I say hi to you, I say we're equal.
Right.
But if I say, good morning, ma'am, welcome, how are you today? I'm saying, I respect you. At the same time, I'm stating, though, that I'm professional if I say that, if I treat you right.
Mm-hmm.
So the first step of service is a fine greeting. The second step of service is, it's all about you. It's me helping you to make the best decisions about my product. I'm helping you relative to my product. I'm here for you relative to my product. And that's the second step. And the third step is farewell. Thank you for allowing me to serve you. That's the moments of service. And that first impression, by the way, is an essential one. Welcome. Because behavioral analysts, I worked with behavioral analysts in University of Colorado and University of Frankfurt. Behavioral analysts can teach you that when you meet somebody, if you come with him 10 feet, if you like it or not, they make a decision about you.
Mm-hmm.
You about them too, subconsciously. Yes. So we made sure that no, you could not enter Ritz-Carlton without people saying in a fine way, looking in the eye and saying, you're important. Not using this word, but look at you and saying, hello. You know, we have to understand that that's what it is. People want to be respected. And I spoke about 2 years ago to the classic hotels of America. All the leaders of the fine hotels of America were in the room, the owners and the general managers. Before me was a speaker who said to them, forget everything you know. Everything is new. Technology. If you don't have the technology of today, you're going to be lost. Everything is new. Forget everything you know. I mean, she was really on forget everything you know. And I was the next speaker, and saying nothing is new. because
there's nothing new under the sun.
That's right. 5,000 years ago, I guarantee you, people wanted to be respected.
Yes.
And last week, and this afternoon, and tomorrow, and in 5,000 years. And if this doesn't help you to show them respect and honor and be there for them, this is wrong. This is only to help you to do that which you're here for, which is not new, caring for people.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, oh, my goodness.
And that is what a leader has to lead people to. That's what a hiring employee for, to care for people, not to fulfill a certain function, but to join me on a beautiful journey to be the best in the world for caring for people.
Yes. It sounds simple. It's not always easy, right, Horace? It's not always easy, but I could not agree more. It really comes down. I say any organization is made up of people. And, you know, I think about you, and I know that you were obsessed over the customer. But when I really, you know, stop and think about you, Horace, you were obsessed over the employee.
Oh, yeah.
As well, your business partners. They were your business partners.
No question about it. You try and do that without employees.
Exactly.
And it works. You know, mind you, when I was running Ritz-Carlton, we were our hotels were the leader in every location you were.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so we were the true leader everywhere. And when I left Ritz-Carlton, I created Capella. And guess who's rated number one in the world now? Capella.
Capella.
because we're so smart, it's because we apply those principles, the principle of caring for the customer and the principle that we need employees who want to do the job. Leadership is management is create and is understanding what the customer wants, is creating processes, system controls, and so on to deliver what the customer wants. That's good management. Leadership is creating an environment in which the employees want to do it.
Yes.
And so I believe and certainly my service will be better if my employees want to do that. And in order for them to want to do it, I have to invite them to a purpose.
Right. To a higher intent.
And give them purpose. And it's nothing. And it's the moral thing to do. Even Aristotle, 3,000 years ago, said human beings to be fulfilled in life need purpose and belonging. So what I'm offering my employee is a purpose and belonging to an organization, belonging to a group that strives to be excellent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so good, Horace. Oh, my goodness. I have so many more questions for you, but we do need to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with Horace Schulze on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
So welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Horace. It's been such a delight to have him, and we've talked about so many different things. But, Horace, I was reading the acknowledgments, and you thanked a lot of people.
Yeah.
And this touched my heart, because at the end you said, I love you all.
Oh, sure. When I left Ritz-Carlton, Sherry, my wife, convinced me it's time to retire. I was actually traveling 250 days a year, and it was time. And besides that, the painting was painted. It was done. After nearly 20 years, it was done.
Mm-hmm.
So Sherry picked me up with the children in the office, and we left. And the sadness leaving wonderful people behind, and passing and they had a line of employees from the office to my car, left and right, and passing by dishwasher, by people that started as dishwashers and were now in department head position, or started as an assistant waiter and were now banquet manager and so on. Very moving, very moving. And you pass by them, and you know they are the one that created the image.
Mm-hmm.
I was in an office somewhere, planning mm-hmm. things and working and teaching, yes. But it's a doorman in Buckhead or in Berlin or in Philadelphia or in Shanghai, for that matter, that created the image, and the busboy and the maid and so on. And if you don't love them, my goodness, who are you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
look back about this beautiful journey, starting with the first hotel and the pains and everything and the setbacks, but at the same time, they having been rated number one hotel company in the world, ongoing, and mm-hmm. in every location number one because of beautiful people.
Yes.
I wasn't there, believe me. In fact, I have to tell you that I did open every one of the first 50 Ritz-Carlton hotels. I didn't go there to drink champagne. Well, I did that too. But I went there to orient the employees and help teaching and training at the very beginning. And, you know, I before I went there, I always said a little prayer to myself that I hope that I impact the people positively for their life, because that is one of the great honors to be a leader.
Yes.
That you have the opportunity to positively impact the life of many people.
Mm-hmm.
I walked into openings with that intent. And you feel connected to people. And when I went into that first meeting with all the employees sitting there, nervous, the first day of work, which is a significant emotional moment, and then you get involved, here comes our founder, our leader, our president, and they're kind of nervous. And I walked in usually and said, my name is Horst Schulze. I'm the president and founder of this company. I'm very important. And you could feel the shock going through the room.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yes, I am. But as a human being, so are you. No human being is more important than the other human being. So let me tell you right now, my philosophy is, you're a human being, you're important. And as far as the job is concerned, well, let's see how important the jobs are. If you don't show up when we open the hotel and we don't wash dishes, we have nothing.
Yes.
If you make the beds, we have nothing. If mm-hmm. you don't have food, we have nothing. So your job is important. And by the way, if I don't show up, nobody will know.
If they're doing their job, right? The dishes are still getting washed. The beds are still being made.
I was well known that I would say that. After a while, they knew already. It whispered through that I would say that. But it's true. Yeah. Isn't it true? My goodness. Yeah. So if I don't love them, what the heck is wrong with me?
Mm-hmm. Well,
the people that create my image, what's wrong with me?
Absolutely. I could not agree with you more. You know, it's going back to the second greatest commandment. Let's just talk about the Bible for a minute, because
right.
I know that faith is really important to you, Horst. It's been front and center for you and Sherry and how you've led and how you've led your life. But the second greatest commandment is love your neighbor.
That's right. And I mean, but you know, even look at, you said faith. I mean, let me just say, so nobody get nervous about talking about faith, guys. That's a decision. That's all it is another decision.
Mm-hmm.
I made a decision to for faith. Okay.
Yes.
So that's all. And that's all. And some people make a decision not to do that. I mean, and it's up to you. It's up to you.
But free will.
I made it for free will. You know?
Yes, free will.
You know?
Well, I know that there was a really tenuous turnaround situation that you were a part of at the Pittsburgh Hyatt. And I read about that, you know, but I think, you know, I think in the end, it was your love for the people, even the people that were picketing outside right? Because I think you had said to your staff, said, go and take them nice warm cider and sweet rolls.
Oh, we never picketing. Oh, yeah, sure. Sure. Well, yes. Yeah. Okay. Let me be very honest and frank. Yes, they went picketing for a ridiculous reason. The union in Pittsburgh at the time, mind you, that was the mid-70s, was ridiculous, to be honest. Now, if you hear me, unions there, I'm sure by now you have become a little bit more normal. Everything was a strike. Everything was a reason for a strike, and they were very powerful in town and extremely difficult. And they went in the beginning, before they got to know me. Once they got to know me, we had a relationship. It worked. But there they went on the strike again for a silly reason. That now they're outside striking, but it was wind that was very cold. So I said to my man, hurry up outside, hot cider, tea, sweet rolls, whatever we have out there, hot chocolate, serve them. Now, to be honest, I had an ulterior, I wanted to take care of our people, but I had another motive. I knew, being Pittsburgh, that having a strike, a few minutes later, there would be the TV cameras would be there. So I was outside and he said, how come you serve those people? I said, I love them. They're my employees. Mm-hmm. Even though they don't understand, there's a misunderstanding here.
Yes.
And I felt that, but I had ulterior motive. Yes, to be honest.
But it all worked out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we turned this hotel around. It was a lousy hotel when I came there. Within a year and a half, it was the number one hotel in town. And it was good that our president said for a reason that I got a promotion to the worst hotel in the company. But, you know, the worst hotel, you can only go up. So I became a hero in the company because, and 3 years later, I was a vice president over 10 hotels because it was such a success. The worst hotel became excellent.
Yes. Well, that should give our listeners hope. That should give, even no matter where the organization is today, you can put those principles in place, you can put those non-negotiables in place, and it can be turned around. I don't know many people that can do it in a year and a half, of course, but, you know.
Yeah, well, again, a lot of people and a lot of good, some luck and so also, but you need that too. But, you know, you have to, anything can be accomplished. Mind you, people went to the moon, come on. Why wouldn't we be able to turn around our business around? We have to. See, why did they end up the moon? Because that was the vision.
Yes.
That was the destination. That was the high intent. And once you know your intent, then you will find the answers how to accomplish it. If you really look. The model of real leadership. And you know, again, there are so many managers who force things to happen and are successful. Mind you. But leadership is something higher, where you truly align your employee. There's a word that everybody uses today, nobody knows. Truly align your employees behind the objectives. They understand the objective of the company. They have joined, they know how they will benefit from those. They know the motives of them. You communicate, they're part of your company. Don't call them part of your company and, oh, I heard that. Oh, yeah, our employees, oh, they're in this. And I go and talk to 100 employees. Not one of them ever know the vision of the company. Mm-hmm. How are they part?
Right.
The model of it is you have a higher purpose, a vision. Then you have to commit yourself to it. And then you have to say, what do I have to start doing in order to accomplish that person, that purpose? And then you have to keep focus on it. Mm-hmm. And that's where people break down. I learned that, believe me.
I agree.
They may have a vision, but it's a pipe dream. And when they see a problem, they make excuses. There's no excuse. One, you stick to it. in spite of anything, you fall down in the mud, you stand up and keep on going toward your destination.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have no idea. Nobody can comprehend the difficulty in Pittsburgh. Nobody can comprehend it. I mean, honestly, at the time, Union, in the beginning, after a year, they were nearly on my side. Because A, I didn't give up.
Mm-hmm.
I was relentless on it. B, they start to understand I wasn't there to exploit anybody. I was there to create something excellent for all concerned. And if you stick to it, people will sooner or later understand you cannot lose.
Yes.
Keep focus. A leader has the inner fortitude to keep focus on the vision, no matter what the difficulties are.
That's so good, Horace. Well, it reminds me, you'd mentioned going to the moon. And I love that story of JFK when he was at NASA and he was saying to talking to a janitor, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I'm putting a man on the moon."
That's right.
You know, relentless about that focus and making sure everybody understood their role.
And exactly, and see something higher in what you're doing. Don't just work there. It is the old story that probably everybody has heard before. When you go for work, then there is somebody working and you're putting stones on top of each other and said, what are you doing? Well, I'm putting stones on top of each other. And the next one is doing the same thing. And he asks, what are you doing? He said, I'm building a wall. And he asked the next one says, he stops doing it. They're all doing the same and says, I'm building a wonderful cathedral.
Yes.
What is your high intent?
Mm-hmm.
Are you putting bricks on top of each other or are you creating a cathedral?
Yes.
I mean, we are human beings. We should see something higher and not just fulfill a function.
Yes. That's so good.
And that's certainly the leader has to have that. And he has to connect and align his or her people behind it. And give them purpose too. You know, again, Aristotle said, you need purpose and belonging. So that means people who work for me, I have an obligation to give them purpose.
Mm-hmm.
If people need that to be fulfilled.
Right. That's so good. That's a mic drop. Well, you've already mentioned it, but you did go on to found Capella Hotels. I think there's maybe 12 or...
Yeah, they're 12 now.
12 now.
The thing was, I have to tell that story because as I said, my wife picked me up. We retired after traveling so much and you can only do it. You have a great union at home. Otherwise, you couldn't have done it. And a great wife, a great family. And they picked me up and we went home. We had a weekend. And on Monday, I said, Sherry, I'm going to do it again. Now, to be honest, I've never seen her that annoyed.
I cannot imagine her being annoyed. But
how dare you, after Trump, how dare you? You retire for a weekend. And I said, well, I realize she's right. I said, I'm sorry, you're right. I was just thinking what I did wrong in my... Yes, in my last 20 years, I would like to do it better this time. And a couple of days later, my wife came to me and said, that's who you are. You go on, but don't do it too much and I will support you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I started Capella. I wanted to build an ultra luxury chain. I built a luxury chain. And of course, there were all ultra luxury hotels in the world, but no chain. I wanted to be the first one to build an ultra luxury chain.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that with Capella, which is now the highest rated hotel company in the world. I sold it a couple of years ago.
Yes.
But it is now rated number one. And Ritz-Carlton was, for about the last 11 years when I was running it, was rated number one. Now it's Capella. And it is... an ultra luxury. The difference is simple. We do no more than 100 rooms. We don't take conventions. We We give food. There is, for example, there's no check-in time, no check-out time. There's no hours operation. You tell us what you want for service and we take it. We call you beforehand and say, what do you want in Singapore when you come here or where? Wow.
Very personalized.
Very, very individualized.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the millennials in our studies, the millennials say, do it my way. They want much more personalization than people in my generation. I would still go to, to a McDonald's, I would say number one. The millennial will say number one, but no tomatoes, two slices of pickles, no mayonnaise, and individualization. So we can totally respond to individualization. I cannot do that in a 500-room Ritz-Carlton.
Right.
I cannot do everything, but in a Capella, I can call you and say what you need, anything you want when you come here.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, thank you. Because I was going to ask you, what's the difference? So you just answered that question for me. Well, so thank you.
Of course, necessarily, there is another difference. We have to charge more.
Yes, right. That's the other difference.
No choice.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Horace, your book came out in 2019, Excellence Wins. Here's the subtitle, A No-Nonsense Guide to Becoming the Best in a World of Compromise.
Yeah.
I would highly, highly, highly encourage our listeners, go out and get this book. Horace, how do you, and you had even said it earlier, you said maybe in the beginning, the intent and the vision was this, but over time,
People run into people run into problems and find excuses. Wait a minute. If you really had a high intent and really question yourself, is it good for everybody? The excuses that I find are issues to overcome, not issues to make excuses with. Allow me to give you an example so it's understood.
Mm-hmm.
A typical manager, I'm arriving in a town and the manager picks me up. And I threw a little story that I want to mention where it was, otherwise the name. The manager picks me up, that's normal, in a limousine. And we go to his hotel and I ask him on the way right there, what is your intent with the hotel? You see, the vision is clearly being established, we want the best number, but what is your intent in this location with your hotel? And he said, if I had a bigger ballroom, if my restaurant wasn't on the second floor, if I would be closer to downtown, he made excuses for a vision he didn't even have. I visited a couple of days later, a very similar hotel, a very similar city. Manager picked me up and asked the same question. And he answered me, my intent with the hotel host, check me out within a year. This will be the pride of the city. He had an intent, high intent. And you could feel in the hotel and in the action. Now, the manager, the one that I saw first, he was a pretty good manager. He managed.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't lead to a higher intent and his people. The satisfaction when he made an emperor survey was nothing in comparison to the other, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one was a leader and one is a manager.
Yes.
The problem is, and we see it in our society and everywhere, we have a leadership crisis. I consequently made a study of 65 general managers, and I tell you, I was generous to find that there are five leaders and the rest of them are managers.
Mm-hmm.
I was generous.
Right. Yeah. Well, we need to change that. I know that, you know, and this might be something that you would want to tell our listeners about. I know that you're an expert in residence with Arch and Tower.
Yeah.
Well, you share principles of excellence and it's a masterclass.
Yeah. It's a masterclass we do. And of course, I do a lot of consulting and speeches.
Mm-hmm.
Truly a lot. I'm on a few boards. I'm helping. I'm a resident. That means they're giving me an office, and I share a secretary, and I consequently and I kind of mentor them, They're doing great consulting, great stuff, great young people. I mean, it's fantastic. And so that's what I do, and helping them. And I feel great because they're young and they're enthusiastic in helping others. Mm-hmm. I myself do consulting and
right
individually, independently. Yeah,
anybody would be lucky, seriously, Horst, to have you on their board, to have you consulting with them.
It's really fun because I don't take hotels, by the way. I don't accept hotels or hotel companies. I want to do different because it's all it's the same. What does the customer want? How do I create the processes? How do I align my employees? What are the processes? I mean, mm-hmm. if I have a hardware store or hotel, it's about the customer. So the customer feels good. And the hammers in that hardware store don't make customers feel good. It's
mm-hmm. Yes, that is so true. That is so true. I've got two more questions for you, and then I want to talk about something extra. Okay. So, Horace, what would you say to your 14-year-old self?
Oh, wow. Wow. I would tell him the mistakes that I made, not to do them. That's a bad lot. Go out there by all means, no matter what they are, be honorable. Be honest. Mm-hmm. Have integrity. Because one day wake up one morning like I did, and you look back at your life and you're 80, and you said, oh my gosh, 80, cannot be true. I'm old. Wow. And then the next thought for me was, well, but that's great. Not everybody makes it here. But then I look back at my life, and you cannot avoid look back at life. You cannot avoid, but you see yourself. And you mm-hmm. see yourself when you were not as good as you should have been. And I would warn that 14-year-olds, you don't want to look back at some other stuff.
I heard once someone say that when we look back over our life, there will be disappointments because sometimes things don't go the way that you wanted them to go. There's things that happen that are sometimes out of our control.
Yeah.
But you don't want to look back with regret.
Yeah.
And there's a difference, right? But
yeah, that's right. And I could easily warn my 14-year-old self what to avoid and what not to, what to go for. It's kind of an interesting thought.
Yes, it is. But when I think about you, Horace, I mean, you are a living legend. You truly are. And at the end of your life, you're going to look back. And I think the thing that, you know, you're going to be known for a lot of different things. But one of the things that you're going to be known for, I think, is your love for people and your care for people.
Thank you.
Yes. You had said that, how, you know, did you pray that prayer? How can I make a positive impact in this person's life?
Well,
and if we approach every day like that.
Yeah. Well, by the way, it's funny. I still do that in every speech that I make, that I pray that somebody gets it and that I make a positive impact in somebody's life in that speech. You know, what other intent should you have when you walk into a speech? You know,
absolutely.
That they like you. I don't go there to be liked. I go there to give you something.
To make an impact.
To make an impact, you know.
Yes, agreed. Well, let me ask you something. This is called Something Extra. I ask every guest this question. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Well, I kind of address that very, very much in our conversation. You're not a leader unless you have purpose and vision. You're not a leader. You may be working, you may be a good manager, but if it is not very clear what is your purpose, and then you need and a kind of set a model, and then you need the inner fortitude to keep focus mm-hmm. on a purpose. If that purpose is clearly of integrity and value for all concerned, it's not a purpose that is really of value unless you identify, not just simply answering it, I actually spent a day with two people. A day we made T-shirt and say, is it good for the investors? And we said, yes and no, but it's not. And then we agonized about it. But once you know that as a leader, that's what, then you have to have the inner fortitude to go for it.
Mm-hmm. And that is good.
And Anna, and the other thing that you have, that you have to have as, that you must have in life, forgive me. And as a man, be a great leader for a great marriage. Ask your wife, guys, get over your macho-ness and ask your wife how you can be a better husband.
Oh.
And no, it is the most important union you have. And, you know, and guys, all the work, all the hard work, that the effort that we put into work, let's spend the 10% of it on our marriage. Another message.
Great advice. Sorry. Great advice.
Sorry I came up with that, but I had to.
Of course, I completely agree with you, because at the end of your life, if you don't even have someone to share things with, right? I mean, what good is it, right?
What good is it?
And Horse and Sherry have a beautiful, beautiful marriage. And as Horse said, you know, they're madly in love with each other. And I think that is something that we all should aspire to. Truly.
Absolutely. And again, it's your decision. My goodness. And after your decision is, what am I going to do about it? Commit yourself. What are you going to do about it? And work on it.
Yes.
Everything.
Agree.
Everything is your decision. Except. Yes.
Everything is a decision. That's right. Your life is a collection of decisions, right? Yes. Horse. Well, Horse, this has been so much fun. I have loved every single moment of podcast episode. Thank you so much for making the time to be on the show today. Cannot wait for our listeners to hear from you.
It's a real pleasure. Thank you. I'm honored to be with you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.